The Guardian. Football Weekly.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, look out, ladies of Europe. Peter Crouch is coming. Free-loving, beanpole-type striker making use of surprisingly good touch to put Hotspurs into Champions League group stages. As celebrations continue, and not just at teams they might be facing, in other big cup news, Sevilla get dumped out like that bin lady's cat, and there's last-minute heartbreak for Sampdoria at the hands of Werder Bremen. We round up the continental action and look ahead to the opening weekend in Spain and Italy. Sid Lowe does the usual with the latest from the Liga, and Barry does the crossword as we talk Serie A too. There's your post, transfer talk, and thrilling previews of the weekend's games in the Premier League. All of that in today's Football Weekly Extra. Hello, world. On board today, excitingly enough, we have Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Tom Lutz.
Hello.
And hello, Jacob Steinberg.
Hello, James.
Yes. Good to see you. It was like June never ended, Jacob.
It was like June never ended.
Right. World Cup.
Indeed, the World Cup.
Yeah, the only difference being we've got some terrific football to talk about now.
Yeah, well yeah. Spurs, though, not too happy about that.
Well, you're a West Ham fan.
Yeah.
It is the big story, isn't it, Barry?
It is. I won't lie. I really wanted to see them crash out, only because of the premature celebrations of the players and fans when they qualified for the fourth place in the Premier League ahead of City last season. But now that they've swept aside
Why was that premature?
Because they were celebrating raucously as if they had already qualified for the Champions League.
No, they qualified for the playoff, and that was something to celebrate it. Huh?
Not to the extent they were going on about it, but...
All right.
Anyway, I'm pleased they're in it now. It's nice to see someone new from England participating, and they could do quite well, depending on how the draw goes for them. We're recording on Thursday. The draw will probably have been made by the time this goes up on the site. But yeah, it's exciting times for Spurs fans. Right.
Exciting times for Peter Crouch as well. Nice to see he doesn't only score away from home.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. He's having a difficult time.
He's been having a very
didn't you see Harry Redknapp backing him up, saying he's a lovely lad?
Yep.
Here you are, bring it up again.
No, it is wrong. Bringing what up again, Jacob? But it was an impressive hat trick, no?
It was, but it was only against young boys. It's only because they managed to balls up the first leg so much. Yeah.
I think it was set up really nicely for Spurs as soon as they fell behind, because they're such an attacking side. And they basically had to then go and attack from, you know, pretty early on in the first leg. And last night, when you've got Asua Koto and Bale and people like that, who, not strikers, but very good players going forward, it was the ideal game. But again, younger boys aren't actually a very good side.
Well, I think, Jacob, you make a fine point. It's only the fact that they did mess things up so spectacularly in Switzerland that we're now raving about all of this.
If they defend like that in the first, like they did in the first leg, throughout the whole game, if they were to get into a Real Madrid, then it could be severely embarrassing for them.
Mm. Well, I think the reason they defended like that in the first game is because they very much thought they were going to walk the game, and they totally underestimated the young boys. Considering how poor young boys were in the second leg, that's quite a feat to underestimate them, but they were awful at set pieces, and Spurs obviously have a lot of width, and Harry decided to play two holding midfield players last night, defended a lot deeper, and Spurs won very, very easily in the end.
Terrific goal from Jermaine Defoe. Tiki Taki says, somehow I doubt Defoe will get the same treatment as Thierry Henry for his handball. I mean, a couple of issues here. First off, why is it that he's not Defoe equals cheat all over the back pages?
Because he's English.
Right, but there's no other difference between this and the Thierry Henry.
It's a less crucial situation. It wasn't a World Cup.
But in terms of the ethics involved, he was equally aware of what he'd done and continued to.
It's completely correct.
That's the thing, that you don't stop. If you're playing football, if you get away with it, then well done.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious to know, there was a guy standing behind the goal that looked like an official of some kind, holding some sort of lightsaber type thing, who had a very good view of that. Why didn't he give it?
Are you being sarcastic?
No.
The match of the fifth official that...
Is that the fifth?
Yeah, I
didn't realise...
Well, I don't know. I didn't know he had a lightsaber.
See, I was watching this game with the sound turned down because I was at a social gathering.
Right. Did anyone else spot the lightsaber behind the goal?
I did. Yeah, he had a little wand.
Did he?
Yeah, the fifth official has a little, like, Harry Potter wand.
What's that for?
Just like scaring people. I don't know. I assume he presses it and then something buzzes in the ref's ear.
Right.
Couldn't he just have a little button then? Or does he have to have a wand?
This is a wand, though. I don't know.
Well, if it was a wand, it would be have a white tip at each end, but this didn't. It was black.
Yeah, it's cooler that one, right. I thought.
Anyway, Gomez is injured, though.
Yes, but yeah. Cudicini, sorry.
No, Cudicini's passed it.
But I thought if young boys were going to have a chance last night, they were 2-0 down, come out for the second half, Cudicini's coming back from a terrible accident, a slippy pitch, and they had a chance very early on in the second half, which Cudicini handled well, and I think that was their chance gone.
You reckon he's passed it? We can't take anything you say seriously about Spurs, can we, Jake?
Why is this?
I think you know why. All right, so you didn't think they were that impressive despite their victory over a young boys?
No, I thought they were impressive.
Oh, okay.
But I do think at home they're as good as any side.
Right, and
so
especially if that side's called Wigan and are visiting them this weekend. Yeah. What do we think about that? This is the fixture that brought us 9-1.
I have a sneaky feeling, which could be completely wrong, and I may end up looking a total fool again, that Wigan might get something from this game. Yeah, you're about to. You see,
I just inhaled my hot cocoa.
Sorry about that. It's just Spurs. They seem to fall into all the classic traps, and this could be what after their rousing victory over Young Boys, they've qualified for Europe. They're going to be focused on the Champions League, and this could be just the kind of game they slip up in. The concentration goes. Plus, Wigan had a magnificent Carling Cup victory over Hartlepool during the week. And I looked on their website today. Confidence is high. They scored 3 goals. They've got a win under their belt. There's no reason why they shouldn't go to Spurs and win.
Right. And at least keep it in single figures.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we mentioned it on Monday's pod, but on the Wigan website, there was a marvellous match report in which... the headline stated Wigan very unlucky not to get a result.
Called it a brilliant performance, didn't they?
The one on Saturday against 6-0. Chelsea.
That is a result. Do you think Martinez goes if they get lose 7 or 8-0 at Wigan?
I don't know how many more big hidings they can ship without him getting the chop, but I don't think he'll go if they just lose. But if it's another 6-7-0.
That's what, 18 goals conceded unanswered in 3 Premier League games now for Wigan, including the 8-0 at the end of last season.
None scored as well.
8-0, 4-0, and 6-0. Well, you do the math, he said, not being able to bother to work it out himself.
18.
Right, good. Okay, then. Now, elsewhere this weekend, we'll talk more about the Champions League playoffs, because there were plenty of them later on. But one or two other fixtures from this weekend's games. It's not a very exciting fixture list, I have to say. You've got Leaders Chelsea hosting Stoke. I mean, on the subject of how many goals... Chelsea so far have had 6-0 and 6-0.
Well, the biggest thing about that game is which bench is Asmir Begovic going to sit on. He's currently the Stoke reserve keeper, but he refused to play in the Carling Cup because he wants to go to Chelsea and be their presumably third or fourth in line behind Petr Cech. It drummed up a bit of a controversy about players refusing to play for their teams.
And rightly so, no?
Well, yeah, they're under contract. If they're picked, they should play.
He has been fined. Sorry, yeah.
So Tony Pulis seems to be falling out with a lot of his players as well. Like he did at the end of last season, it's another one. You wonder about his man management skills. And Stoke haven't won a game yet. They've lost both games.
Yep.
But to be fair, I'd say a lot of young professional footballers are very easy to fall out with.
I know, but when it's sort of the Graham Souness effect, when someone starts falling out with every single player, then you wonder if maybe it's him.
He hasn't done a bad job so far in the Premier League, though, despite falling out with people.
Fair point. Nice bit of perspective there.
Thank you.
Tom. Blackburn Arsenal, do you hate these teams as well, Jacob?
Blackburn are managed by Sam Allardyce.
Right. And Arsenal are well Arsenal. It's a tough game, this, for the Gunners.
Yeah,
Nespa.
They lost last season.
Yeah.
Against the Barrage.
And Blackburn were actually very good against Birmingham last week. They really
should've week before when they beat Everton, though.
Yeah, they should have won 2 or 3-0 last week, but Foster happened to be really good for Birmingham, and Blackburn were a bit unlucky.
Saved a penalty, didn't he?
Yeah.
Blackburn only lost 3 games at home last season, and they're strong at home. And this obviously is the kind of game Arsenal could lose. That just sounds dopey. But you know what I mean? It's exactly the kind of game Arsenal,
yeah,
where Arsenal will drop points, right, and that the points that will cost them the possible tilt at the title come the end of the season.
Tough fixture too for, well, I was going to say Man United, but I can't be bothered, really. They're taking on West Ham, Jacob. Yeah. Yeah, Man United, West Ham, ouch.
Well, Scott Parker, I think, yesterday said that it's the kind of game you dread.
Right.
Going to Old Trafford.
Yeah. Although, am I wrong, or did West Ham win at Old Trafford a couple of seasons ago?
Yeah, with Tevez.
Yeah.
And they've won, I think, three times there in the last 10 years, but they're going to get walloped.
Walloped?
Yeah.
You've had two defeats in the league. You only just scraped by League Two side Oxford in the League Cup was the 90th minute goal from Scott Parker.
So that makes us the form team, though, because they drew their last game, United.
That's a fair point.
Jacob, sorry, can I just ask? I've only seen highlights, if that's what you could call them. How bad are West Ham?
Well, actually, I only saw the highlights of the Bolton game as well, but I saw the full 90 minutes of purgatory of the Villa game, and they were absolutely dreadful. It looked like they might need not have changed managers, because Grant seems to have made no impact whatsoever. I'm not really sure about him. I know
they weren't that bad under Zola, though, were they?
They were pretty dire last season. By the end of his reign, he was really really lost it.
What's so bad about them? What is it that's
going
wrong?
They played quite well on Saturday. They should have. I mean, they missed a penalty, and then it was just obvious they were going to lose. As soon as they couldn't deal with the the long balls from Bolton, as soon as the goal went in, they completely lost their heads. And apparently, it was a case of how many Bolton wanted to score. They can't defend. The fullbacks aren't good enough, and Robert Green has started the season pretty poorly as well, so it's looking fairly bleak.
Barry, bebe.
Be my baby.
Yeah, okay, I will. But you would mention beforehand this mysterious Portuguese fellow.
Well, it's the mysterious Portuguese fellow who used to be homeless, and then he found a home at Old Trafford. But he couldn't find a home in the Old Trafford or the Manchester United reserves the other night. It was a strange story. It was in The Guardian yesterday, yesterday being Wednesday, that he was supposed to get his first run out in front of Sir Alex Ferguson for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's Man U reserves. But apparently they had a bit of a confab and Solskjaer said, look, he's just not good enough to play in the reserves. I thought... perhaps the most interesting thing about the whole story was the fact that they were playing the Man City reserves, who are no longer called the reserves, they're called the elite squad.
Any money Gary Cook's behind that, mate. Yeah. It's got more than a whiff of Cook about it.
I mean, the Tik Plottons now, this is obviously the player, Portuguese player, that Fergie signed for $7.5 million from some third or fourth division club in Portugal, where he'd gone on a free some weeks previously. Fergie bought him sight unseen, and none of his scouts had seen him. He just went on a hunch, and obviously there's a lot of speculation as to what might have prompted that hunch, nobody knows.
You just made a gesture when you said hunch that doesn't traditionally mean hunch. It means something quite different. But anyway, I don't know. It's all beyond me what you might be talking about. There you go. Well, we'll talk about Man City a little bit later on. There's certainly plenty to say about them. But in a minute or two, we'll be talking about the other Champions League playoff results and catching up with that Sid Lowe in Spain.
Football Weekly Extra on Guardian.co.uk.
Now, a very exciting set of games, the second legs of the Champions League playoffs. That cracking match at the Marassi Stadium where Sampdoria went into their second leg with Werder Bremen. They were 3-1 down from the first leg. They went 3-0 up. Brilliant goal from Pazzini. Cassano's little back heel wasn't bad either. And 90th minute, they were 3-0 up and they were going through. And then, yikes, Rosenborg scored 4. Werder, not the team. And then Pizarro got it next time. And so Werder Bremen go through. Yet more UEFA coefficient misery for Italy. In other news, Ajax clung on to register a 2-1 victory over Dynamo Kiev. Brilliant goal by Suarez. Do you see that? Luisito Suarez? He basically traps the ball out by the byline and spins and just with his other foot, I can't remember which foot way, I think he stops it with his left and spins and then knocks it in with his right from an impossible angle. It was a fantastic goal. Having painted that particular picture, Slovakian champion Žilina reached the group stages for the first time, beating Sparta Prague. FC Copenhagen beat Rosenborg. Auxerre, French side, yeah, put out Zenit St. Petersburg.
They'll go far.
Ho, ho, ho. Partizan Belgrade knocked out Anderlecht. That was rotten luck for Anderlecht. Did you see they had a perfectly good goal disallowed by the referee, and then it went to penalties, and their pitch basically fell apart. I don't know how Partizan were able to take penalties from the spot quite well, but Anderlecht really weren't. They basically just knocked wide and high and in all places but into the net their penalties, and out they went.
Anderlecht seem to be very luckless in Europe because they all seem to be quite good, but fail at the final hurdle. I think Liverpool knocked them out a couple of years ago. Maybe Everton put them out as well. I can't remember. I'm not as good at remembering as Rob Smythe and Jonathan Wilson. But yeah, they seem to be quite a good team, but never quite make it to the group stages.
All right then. Hapoel Tel Aviv put out Red Bull Salzburg, and Basel beat Sheriff Tiraspol, you know, from Moldova. DN Wong pitches in with some puns for the week. Red Bulls almost upset Hapoel Kart. Frey, who shot the sheriff. Fantastic stuff here. Portuguese win Bragan rights. Bragan rights, because of the Sevilla game, yeah. And one or two others. But anyway, that's Sevilla game. That's probably the top other story beyond Spurs reaching the group stages. Sevilla knocked out, beaten at home by unfancied Portuguese side Braga. Let's get Sid Lowe on the line to hear a Spanish reaction to that and, of course, the start of the Liga week season this weekend.
Hello.
Hello. Let's get this out of the way. You've got a book out, haven't you, Sid?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
All right, then. What's it about?
It's about the Spanish political right and the causes of the Civil War and the development of the Franco regime.
All right. Speaking of the Seville War, what's the reaction Seville to being knocked down by Braga?
It's a massive, massive cock-up from Sevilla's point of view. They've got an economic model that depended on them being in the Champions League. Of course, they got the chance to be in the Champions League because of a 93rd-minute goal at the end of the season, and it looked like they got away with it because they'd been very, very close to losing out. And then they just completely blew it. And again, the same as the last time they knocked out the Champions League, a goalkeeper who's normally so reliable, Andres Palop, was absolutely awful this time. I have to say, I'm impressed with him in so much as he came out afterwards and apologised and said it was his fault and was very sorry about it. But it's a real pity because it's a great city for football fans to go to. It's a great club in terms of atmosphere and supporters and stuff like that. I think it's a real shame that they won't be in the Champions League.
Sid, it's Tom here. I just had a question for you. Squillaci sat out the first leg because he wanted to move to Arsenal. Is there any kind of anger against him over there? Or?
Yeah, there is. I mean, people aren't pointing the finger at him and saying we're out because of him, although obviously if you see some of the defending in the second leg, but say more importantly the goalkeeping, then I suppose you would point the finger at him a little bit. But there's anger really because of what he did, not specifically because Sevilla have ended up being out of the Champions League.
He may not be the only departure, assuming his move to Arsenal goes through. Luis Fabiano, I imagine this is only going to increase talk about a move elsewhere for him. Is that right?
Yeah, someone sent me a message the other day. I must admit, I hadn't realised this, that UEFA had changed the rules that from now on a player can play for two clubs in the Champions League. If he's played a qualifying game with a club that then gets knocked out, he can join another club. Now, obviously, Luis Fabiano was in a situation in which Sevilla were negotiating with Olympic Marseille. The fee was around about 15 million euros. Sevilla said that it was, I think the quote they used was ridiculous, and there was no way they'd sell him for that much. But now, they needed to sell anyway, because that's the way their model works. And now, being out of the Champions League, they need to sell even more. And I think that makes the departure of Luis Fabiano increasingly likely. The fact that he can move to another club in the Champions League obviously facilitates that. And, how about that other club in the Champions League being Tottenham? I think it's a move that certainly has got all the ingredients to be logical. I'm not necessarily saying it will happen, but it's a move that would make some sense.
All right. Eric Penner says, next time Sid Lowe is on the pod, can you ask him how Spanish football would react to the Bundesliga moving past La Liga as the European League with the second highest UEFA coefficient, which has implications for how many Champions League teams you get. Spain's record-breaking 06-07 season, when you had three sides in the UEFA Cup semi-finals, two in the final, and Sevilla won the UEFA Cup semi-final, will drop from the coefficient at the start of next season. Basically, as things stand, in a year's time, Germany are going to move past Spain.
Yeah, and that is something that the Spanish will be very, very conscious of. The UEFA coefficient is something that's occupied their minds over the last few years, not least because they've had a very clear sense of trying to catch England, of trying to be the best side in Europe. And the failure of Spanish teams in Europe, particularly obviously led by the continued failure of Real Madrid in Europe, in the sense that they haven't won a knockout tie for 6 years, is something that worries them enormously, not least because there's a pride about them. And of course, the irony in all of this is that a lot of people in Spain are saying, God, all those years we had great clubs, and we kept on saying our bloody national team won't do it as well as the clubs. Well, now they're world champions, easily the best national team around, and the clubs aren't quite doing it for them.
Well, the league season begins this weekend, of course, Sid, and I know you've got a tip-top video preview that will be reaching Guardian viewers, I think, on Friday. But in the meantime, I imagine Barcelona and Real are looking perhaps the favourites, are they?
Yeah, I don't think there's ever been a situation where two clubs are so obviously favourites as this time around with Barcelona and Real Madrid. Lay the stats on you if you want. Valencia finished third last year with 25 points behind, closer to the relegation zone than winning the league. That's 25 points behind second place Real Madrid, by the way. Sevilla, I think, were 33 points behind. You know, we're talking about 11 victories fewer over the course of the season. And those teams have been weakened. Of course, Valencia have sold. David Silva's gone. David Villa's gone. Sevilla have been weakened ever so slightly with the departure of Adriano to Barcelona, and possibly with a departure coming in the next few days, likely to be Luis Fabiano, as we said earlier. So it's hard to see those two teams being as strong as they were last year, and they weren't even close last year. It is true that Atletico Madrid should be a better side, the UEFA Cup winners, of course, and the fact that they haven't sold their best players, Kun Aguero and Forlan, are still there, which I must admit I'm surprised that Aguero is still there, and perhaps the fact that he did nothing at the World Cup helped to kind of quash any sense of big clubs coming in for him. So they should be stronger, but they were miles and miles off. I think they finished 12th or 13th or something ridiculous last season, Atletico Madrid. So it's very, very hard to see anyone getting anywhere near Barcelona and Real Madrid. And I think that's a real pity. Mm. The other thing is what that does to the title race. Now, of course, the title race is exciting just because it's exciting, because it's two great clubs and two fascinating stories. But if it's like last year, to be honest, it could get a little bit tedious seeing them win week in, week out. And you would say, well, yeah, Barcelona are a slightly better team than Real Madrid, but it doesn't matter because Real Madrid are still far better than everyone else. And it's hard to avoid a slightly uncomfortable feeling that this could be a season that's decided on the two chicos and not a lot else. Yeah. Mourinho was moaning this week.
Really?
Mourinho was moaning this week. He was surprisingly downbeat, actually, over the last few days about the situation, saying, well, we're not quite ready. We haven't had the time to build an identity and to get into our stride. And the way I look at it is, well, yeah, it could be a problem, but really and truly, Madrid should be so much better than the rest of the league that even when they're not yet in their stride, even when they haven't yet got a footballing identity and aren't very clear about what they're doing, they should still batter just about everybody in sight.
The other extraordinary story going on at the moment has to be the Ibrahimovic business. Yes. Lovely quote from Galliani, which Paolo Bandini was tweeting before. Galliani, the vice president of Milan, talking to Il Giornale, saying, do I hope to return from Barcelona with Ibrahimovic? Yes. And I also hope to bring back a young Brigitte Bardot. Basically, there's live coverage going on calciomercato.com, the Italian transfer website, of Milan's visit to Barcelona. Obviously, they were playing there last night. They had a 1-1 draw and then lost on penalties in the Trofeo Gamper, if I'm not mistaken. But the trip is largely, for the Italian media, about Milan's extraordinary attempts to argue with Barcelona that they don't really want to sell Ibrahimovic to them for 50 million euros. They'd rather loan him and pay half of his wages into the bargain. Is there any chance of this actually happening, Sid?
It's so difficult because there are so many bits of it that just don't make any sense. I suppose the most likely bit is that Galliani will come back with a young Brigitte Bardot. The situation is difficult, and it's difficult, according to Galliani, essentially because of the size of Ibrahimovic's wages, and that's in the region of 10 million euros a year after tax. So that's very, very problematic for them. Barcelona are keen to get rid of Ibrahimovic, both politically and also because of the situation and economically and the situation with Pep Guardiola. Ibra said the other day that he'd only spoken to Guardiola a couple of times in 6 months and that the relationship was bad and he didn't understand why the coach wanted to sell him, to which Guardiola said, if I've only spoken to him twice in 6 months, there must be a reason. I don't know what he means by speak to him. Does he mean actually go and have a chat in his office? Because I'm sure they'd have spoken more on the training pitch and so on. So that's problematic. Ibrahimovic actually initially didn't want to move, but I think he's seen the way this is going and now clearly does.
Well, he said he wants to play at Milan. He has said he would like to play at Milan now.
Yes, but initially he said no. Initially he was saying very publicly, I want to stay in Barcelona. This is nothing to do with me. This is the club trying to get rid of me. He was saying when he first joined Barcelona that he was doing so to win the Champions League. Well, I suspect he's not going to do that with AC Milan. It's very, very hard to see an agreement being reached. But at the same time, I think we've reached a point where they almost have to come to an agreement because so much has been said that if he stays at Barcelona now, it could be a real mess.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Sid, that's magnificent. Thank you very much for that. We look forward to seeing your preview up on the site tomorrow on Friday, listeners. And, of course, your reaction to the opening weekend when we come back on Monday. Quick nod to Italy. Inter, as the European champions, will be taking on Atletico Madrid in the European Super Cup on Friday. Strange that this is taking place a couple of weeks after the rest of the football season has kicked off, but it's all because the Spanish and Italian take so long to actually get their campaigns underway. But anyway, they'll be playing there. As a result, they play their Serie A game this weekend, their opener against Bologna on Monday night. One of the big questions about Italy is, you know, can Inter win yet again? And I have to say, you know, Benitez coming in for Mourinho, maybe not as effective a manager, some would say, but I think the team looked every bit as good as they were. Balotelli's gone, but all the other players that we thought at the World Cup might be sacrificed, like Maicon, are still there, and they've put in an official bid for Mascherano. It looks like maybe somebody else is going to be arriving, perhaps Scully up front. Sorry, Barry.
Just reading Paolo's Serie A preview, he painted a picture of season ticket sales down, big names out the door, clubs, violence in the stands and on the pitch, debt levels mounting, clubs fighting with the National Federation. It all looks teed up for another pleasant Serie A season.
Exactly.
Is it at a low ebb? Or?
No, not at all. I mean, season ticket sales, in actual fact, attendances were up last year. They're down on that this year. But attendances is not the big factor that it would be in other nations, because Serie A, I think the clubs there, which actually have a massive turnover now, Serie A. I mean, they're behind the Premier League, but Serie A's turnover is going up and up and up, and it's all because of TV rights. And they get 65 to 70% of their revenue from TV. And the lowest figure on there is actually the gate receipts. There is a major problem at the moment. There's part of this ongoing war between the authorities and the fans. The authorities have introduced something called the tessera del tifoso, which is a kind of an identity card which you need to have to go to away games. The fans see this as yet another erosion of their civil liberties and another way to kind of try and homogenize them, and they're trying to resist this. There was even a kind of very violent dispute yesterday when 500 masked ultras attacked a political meeting which was featuring the Home Minister, and cars were set alight and all sorts of fun.
And far be it from me to want to infringe on anyone's civil liberties, but is that not a good advertisement for the card?
Yes. For me, I would say probably yes. I don't know. I'm not a travelling fan in Serie A, and I know that it has become extremely difficult to be both a travelling fan in Italy and a casual fan. But you might argue that the reason that we've got to this extreme situation vis-a-vis actually going to the stadium to watch games is that the people have behaved so very badly in the stadiums that measures had to be taken. And it took so long for them to actually get on and do something that even if they haven't got it absolutely 100% right, you can't knock them for actually doing something. Or I might be completely wrong. Listeners, plenty of listeners in Italy actually, and they will no doubt correct me. I'd be fascinated to hear what their view on all this is, because from abroad it is quite hard to get a perspective. Just to say,
you've already been damned as a heretic this season.
Yes. On the subject of Inter have to be the favourites. Juve have spent loads. Do you know that Juve were the third highest spending club in Europe this summer, and yet who have they bought? They bought Krasic, who's, you know, a decent wide midfielder. They bought Pepe, who's a slightly less decent wide midfielder. They bought Storari, who's a reserve keeper. They just sold Diego, which is really disappointing. They made a loss on him as well. The suspicion is that Juve might now go out and buy somebody else like Pazzini or possibly Giuseppe Rossi, who wants to move back to Italy from Villarreal. We shall see about that.
Aquilani in, obviously.
They've got Aquilani.
He had to do a six-hour medical.
Yeah.
That's how long it would take to look over Aquilani and get all his injuries there.
Well, yes, they have signed Aquilani, you're right. And they've also got Bonucci in at the back, who's a good young defender from Bari. The big thing, as I think Paolo probably says in his previews, their biggest signing was the coach, Luigi Del Neri, who's not always worked wonders wherever he's gone, but he's done particularly well at Sampdoria and, of course, back in the day at Chievo. And I think he will bring them some much-needed kind of coherence and solidity. And I think Juve will be Inter's big rivals. Milan, who, as we heard, have been begging around Europe for players and managed to borrow Kevin Prince-Boateng. That's their big signing of the summer. They talked of youth. Their first signing was a 34-year-old on a free, which tells you a lot about Milan's policy. And I think you're right, they will struggle this year in Europe and at home. Roma, no big news there, apart from the fact that they've lost Luca Toni and they brought in Adriano instead, who is massively overweight and has got injured
already and is out for the first month, and the years are passing for Totti and not looking especially good for them. Two big games in this opening weekend that could involve teams that you might think, might they bust into the top four? One is Fiorentina-Napoli. Fiorentina now under Sinisa Mihalovic's guidance, and he did brilliantly at Catania, although they've lost Jovetic, so, but that'll be a very interesting game. The other one is Sampdoria-Lazio. Samp obviously reeling from their exit from the Champions League. Lazio, though, are due for a bit of a return to form. Obviously, used to be a big gun in Serie A. And they've made one or two interesting signings. A couple of Man City rejects, Garrido and possibly Santa Cruz. But there's this Brazilian fellow, Hernanes, kind of a Brazilian Xavi Alonso. It seems to be the kind of player he is. And a lot of English clubs apparently were in for him. And he's a former Brazilian Player of the Year.
What is behind Lazio's kind of decline in the last few years?
The fact that they decided to balance the books, largely.
Right. So sensible economics.
Well, some of it was sensible, some of it less so, because one of the things that they did do was that the president, Claudio Lotito, decided that he would kind of arbitrarily reduce players' contracts. And if the players didn't agree this, he would freeze them out of the squad. And it was through all of this that they lost Goran Pandev, who they had been offered plenty of money for, on a free to Inter in the middle of last season, because basically Pandev took them to court and the court said, you can't do that, it's not legal, and Pandev, you are now released from your contract. So he walked to Inter on a free. Now, the other player who they were doing this to, and they really, really suffered for the first half of last season, was a Ledesma, who's a midfielder, a very, very important player for them, a kind of holding midfielder. And he has now actually signed up for a new deal. And with Eddie Rejo, who's a very sensible manager, I think they will actually do well. But it's a big game for them away to Sampdoria. First game, of course, FACT fans will remember that it was never shown live on Channel 4, Sampdoria Lazio. It was 3-3.
I was going to ask what the score was.
The score was 3-3, yeah. Parma, a lot of love for them. Little Giovinco. A lot of people say he didn't get a fair crack of the whip when he was at Juventus. Tiny little fellow, lovely. Too small, I would say, too small, but we'll see. Have you not seen him, Barry?
No.
He's a very talented young man. He did very well for the under-21s when everyone else was a bit small. The step up, I think, is a problem.
How small is he?
I think he's smaller than Gianfranco Zola, for example.
Okay.
Zola was kind of low centre of gravity, stocky, small, whereas Giovinco just looks like, you know, say if you watch one of those near-future science fiction films and there's some kid who's been kept in a tank because he has kind of psych abilities and can, you know, he looks like that. He's kind of bald and kind of just big head and a bit Mekon-esque in some ways.
He sound exactly like you.
I think I can't possibly now respond to that because I've just been very rude about Giovinco. I've been basically hoisted by my own petard. Should just mention Genoa, though, who do look very, very interesting and have signed a whole load of players and I think could really challenge for a top four finish this year. Let's move on then hastily to posts. Clockwork Ringmaster says, can I register my... Oh, I should do the Scottish accent. He's from Scotland. Can I register my irritation with a blackout of Scottish matters on the pod? I see this in the light of the highly enjoyable and interesting detailed lowdown on the Bundesliga. And he points out quite correctly that we did a UEFA Cup lowdown but overlooked completely the fact that there were three Scottish teams in it. Did you know about this?
Well, I attempted to discuss...
Yeah, you did.
What's his name? Kyle Lafferty,
yes,
being a moron,
yes,
in Monday's pod, but right, I was cut off at the source. No one was having any of it because he got sent off for being a moron again.
Right.
But there's an interesting story about one of the Europa League games tonight. No, really. Dundee United are off to Greece to play AEK Athens in the second leg. They're a goal down. But for some reason, I'm not sure of AEK Athens can't play in their home stadium, so they've been moved to the stadium of their neighbours, which I think is Panionios. But the Panionios fans were so aghast at the prospect of AEK Athens using their stadium as a home ground that they vandalised it, dug up the pitch, wrecked the goals, put up very obscene banners telling UEFA exactly what to do with their fixture. So now it's been moved again somewhere else in Athens.
And Dundee were quite close to going through on a technicality. If the game couldn't be played for a while, they were saying that they'd just kick Athens out and Dundee were going to go through.
And I think given the recent history, that's probably any Scottish also-ran's best hope of getting into the Europa League, because they're qualifying history is pretty poor. Not only do they generally all crash out, they crash out in fine style without scoring a goal and conceding many.
Harsh but fair. Clock whirring, I do apologise for that, but pretty ample coverage there of the Scottish football in the Europa League, which of course takes place the evening of the day in which we are recording the pods. We can't really address the Europa League games. Or Europa League qualifiers as they are. Ooh, Blaggard also wants us to talk about Torquay more. How about a mention of Torquay's magnificent defensive record in Thursday's pod? 961 minutes of league football without conceding. The last goal we let in was in fact an own goal. Well done to Torquay. Relum says, oh, on the subject of best debuts, what about Alvaro Chinarakoba and his debut for Inter? Doe slaps forehead with palm. Can't believe I missed this. I was even sat there for this game. Rakoba, famously, the day that Inter unveiled Ronaldo, the real Ronaldo, and everyone went, wow, we're going to see it. Oh, phenomenal. They were 1-0 down at home to Brescia, newly promoted Brescia, and on came Alvaro Chinarakoba and scored two absolute stunners, one free kick and one goal from pretty much the halfway line. Moriero did the old boot polishing, you know, invented that, I think. I think that was the day that was first on the... Well done, Relum, for remembering that. Now, other weekend fixtures in the Premier League. We've got your Blackpool against Fulham. Blackpool, of course, beaten by MK Dons during the week in the Carling Cup, although I doubt Blackpool were worrying too much about the League Cup, are they?
Ian Holloway wasn't there, was he?
He wasn't there,
off scouting, possibly.
A Sheffield Wednesday player, I think, no?
That'll help them.
Yeah.
I think it's quite a good yardstick, the Fulham game, for Blackpool, because against Wigan they played against a shambles. Against Arsenal they played against a side that was on very good form. And this is kind of a decent-ish side, and probably the side they're going to need to take points off occasionally if they're going to stay up. So I think finally we're going to see exactly how good or bad Blackpool are.
Right. Where is this game actually being played? Is it at Blackpool Stadium?
I think it's at home.
So it is actually ready now? Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, that'd be exciting. Wolves are hosting Newcastle. Could be quite a tight affair, that one.
Wolves won 5 at home last season. Newcastle are going on the back of their
6-0.
Excellent win over Villa. Stephen Taylor has been transfer listed by Newcastle. He's a former local lad, great man to kiss the crest, and he'd die for the black and white stripes, but apparently he draws the line at not getting 65 grand a week wages, so his contract talks have stalled, so he's probably going to be out. But Newcastle, I would imagine, will win, given Wolves' terrible home record.
Well, they've had a decent start, Wolves.
They look like a decent side this year, I think. Maybe mid-table.
We shall see. Bolton on Sunday are taking on Birmingham. Birmingham are hoping to sign in Charles Nzogbia. I bet Charles Nzogbia is hoping they sign him as well. Aston Villa host Everton. Two teams in some trouble.
Yeah, it's a shame for Everton, isn't it? Because every year they start badly and then they go on some massive run. Mm. About 20 games in the middle of the season when, you know, they're unbeaten and they've started badly again. It's just... Yeah. It's a bit annoying for them, isn't it?
Well, they don't play badly, but they don't score any goals, I think, seems to be the problem. And the arrival of, what's-his-face from Leeds, doesn't
Beckford.
It? Beckford, yeah.
He scored last night.
Oh, OK. Who are they playing?
Huddersfield.
Right, OK. And also on Sunday, Sunderland, Barry, hosting Man City. Now, Man City, since last we spoke, had that whopping 3-0 win over Liverpool at Eastlands. Was that them unveiling their true terrific colours, or was that Liverpool being really horrific?
I think it's a bit of both. Liverpool were horrific. They're in a lot of trouble, I think. They just couldn't compete at all. And it was strange because Roy Hodgson played a 4-4-2 and stuck with it when it quite clearly wasn't working. They were overrun in midfield. Mancini had his three holding midfielders, as is customary. And Hodgson didn't seem to want to do anything about it. Liverpool had no width at all, and that's, you know, compared to City, who had were running up and down the touchlines all night, and Liverpool could easily have lost by a lot more. They play West Brom on Sunday, and like Tom says, that's kind of a yardstick for them as well, and that's what it's come to, I think, for Liverpool.
You're confident about your bet, aren't you?
I'm very confident about my bet. In fact, I was thinking I might amend it to finishing outside the top 16 rather than top 6. But yeah. No, they won't be that bad, but I think they're in huge amount of trouble. As for Sunderland, they've won 2 away in a year, and that's shocking. Steve Bruce blamed the referee for their first poor result this season when they threw away a 2-goal lead, and he blamed the players for their defeat at the weekend just gone. And you wonder, when is he going to have to start pointing his big finger of blame at himself?
I don't know. I don't. Possibly after this weekend when they host Man City, as I say. Yeah, plenty of posters are reckoning Roy got it wrong with the 4-4-2, with the lack of response to City's midfield dominance. Of course, Mascherano, we were talking earlier about players not making themselves available for a game. And
Inter, you contrast that with James Milner,
yeah,
who played against West Ham, is absolutely fantastic. And I don't understand why you can't just play a game of football. You're going to leave and then...
The thing that the difference might be with Mascherano, that he has said that he wants to leave. The club has said, we're not going to sell you. So his, presumably his next course of action is to say, well, all right, if you're talking about keeping me here till the end of my contract, then I'm going to talk about not actually being...
But he signed a contract.
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
Paid millions to...
Yeah. He was happy with the contract when he signed it, yes. Yeah. Okay. And, well, Mod Moore says, is it me or have Man City gelled quicker than Ronaldo in front of a surrogate mother? Most disturbing. It was a very impressive win, wasn't it, Jacob?
It was very impressive. I thought it was quite weird. It was quite a strangely tedious game. But they only had three shots on goal, City, and they scored them all. And there were patches of it where they were very, very impressive. And Adam Johnson looks like he's going to be a really top player.
That was the thing, wasn't it? They had Johnson on the right and coming in on the left
Milner,
was Milner.
And they've still got Balotelli and Silva to come in.
They had a false number nine and inside-out wingers. Jonathan Wilson still hasn't come down off cloud nine from watching it.
Right, despite the fact the three goals were scored.
Yeah, well, every can have it all your own way. Yeah. But they still have David Silva to come in, and who's on the other winger they have in reserve? I mean... Again, how are you going to accommodate all these players?
I think they'll get rid of Barry and move Milner into that three.
You think they'll sell Barry?
No, I think they'll drop Barry.
All right.
And he's not really that good.
It's crossed everyone's minds at some time, rather.
And how long? It's crossing your mind right now, isn't it?
No.
How long before Adebayo flips as well? Because Joe came on.
Yeah, Adebayo didn't come on, I think. Yeah,
yeah, and Joe went on, so, which is a bit of an insult.
Yeah, Mancini's been bigging up Joe this week. I think he's going to play in the game that we can't preview tonight.
Interesting. All right, well, there you go. Big game then for Sunderland, big game then for Liverpool at home to West Brom, and a big game for West Brom. Big games for everybody, in fact. Super. Looking forward to this weekend. That's it for Football Weekly Extra. We'll be back with Football Weekly on Monday. In the meantime, many, many thanks to Jacob Steinberg.
Thank you, James.
And Tom Lutz.
Bye.
And Barry Glendening.
Thanks.
And Andy Duckworth, guest producer, and you, the listener. Have a super weekend. See you on Monday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.